of women have taken to social media with their experiences of pain when getting an intrauterine device, or IUD. Now the CDC has issued new federal guidelines urging healthcare providers to address the problem. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. So what do the guidelines recommend, and what should patients know about IUDs, their safety, and whether there are any risks? Joining me in this recorded interview to address those questions and discuss the role IUDs play in reproductive care are University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Obstetrics and Gynecology, Dr. Priya Gursahani. Thanks for being here, Dr. Gursahani.
Thank you for having me.
And New York Times reporter Alisha Haridasani Gupta. Welcome, Alisha.
Thanks so much for having me.
UC is a financial supporter of Cincinnati Public Radio. Dr. Gursahani, I want to start with some basics. Can you just explain briefly how an IUD works and what kind of procedure is needed to use an IUD as birth control?
There are two types of intrauterine devices, or two categories, I should say. One is a non-hormonal IUD, and the second one is a hormonal IUD. These are small T-shaped devices that are inserted inside the uterus. The copper or non-hormonal IUD works by creating an inflammatory state to prevent sperm from fertilizing an egg, thereby providing contraception. And the hormonal IUD thickens cervical mucus to prevent sperm from entering the uterus. And both are over 99% effective. So they're one of our most effective but reversible types of contraception. The insertion procedure can be done in the office or in an operating room, and it involves inserting the IUD through the cervix into the uterus. And generally, it shouldn't take more than about 5 minutes.
And how common is it for patients to have pain during the IUD placement procedure?
I think pain is a very individual perception. It can be uncomfortable, so I always tell patients that it can be uncomfortable because the uterus is a muscle that will cramp in response to something entering it, and so there are different ways to try to manage that pain.
Mm-hmm. Alisha, what have you found in your reporting in terms of how common that discomfort or pain is for women?
Well, I think it's very common from my reporting, and you know, my reporting is based on both data and anecdote as well. As you mentioned earlier, social media platforms are just sort of flooded with videos of women commiserating over painful insertions and even removals. And a study published this year scanned TikTok for the top 100 videos with the hashtag IUD and found that 97% of them highlighted the pain of the procedure and the negative side effects. So, you know, there's not much positive reviews of the IUD out there. And when we published our piece online, we heard from so many women across the internet as well on our social platforms and in our comments section of just how painful it can be, and also how their pain and anxiety was dismissed by their doctors. I just wanted to give you a few examples of the comments that we received, if you're open to that.
Yes, please.
Okay, great. So someone wrote in saying, when I had an IUD put in about 9 years ago, I was told to expect nothing more than a mild cramping. As I drove myself home on the interstate immediately after the procedure, I started having cramps so extreme that I started blacking out. And, you know, she was able to pull off on the side of the highway and, you know, and sort of take some time, but that was a dangerous situation that she was in. Someone else wrote, did anyone else pass out? You know, so a lot of this is maybe we're hearing from sort of extreme cases who are really passionately sharing their experiences, but it is pretty common. And I want to add that a survey published last year also found that only 4% of physicians are really offering sort of an injection of a local anesthetic. So you have this common experience of pain, and you have a very small number of physicians trying to mitigate it.
Dr. Gursahani, you know, Alisha was just talking about these videos. I imagine that can be very frightening for women who are considering this form of birth control, which you said is very effective, a very effective non-reversible form of birth control. Where should patients go for more information? Where, if they see these videos and they're worried, what would you advise?
I think there are certainly reliable sources online besides speaking to your physician. The CDC website is a very reliable website, or there is another one called bedsider.org. You know, with social media, you have to be careful because you have to know the background of the source providing the information. And I would encourage people to investigate who is providing it, whether it is a healthcare professional or a non-healthcare professional. But, you know, talking to your physician, I think, is always best.
Yeah. The CDC has now issued new guidance for doctors related to placing and removing IUDs. Talk to us about what's changed in the CDC's guidance.
So I think the CDC really wants to focus on patient-centered shared decision-making. And in the statement that they recently issued, it's focusing on who are candidates for IUDs, considerations of the timing of placement, and there's a large focus on pain management during IUD insertion and a review of some of the data to support that.
And is that because of the statistic that Alicia mentioned, that only about 4% of physicians were offering ways to mitigate that pain?
I would imagine so. I'm guessing there were enough complaints that led to them making this statement or feeling that it was needed to state something, which in my mind should be obvious because it is a procedure. It's an intimate procedure, and we should always be considerate of pain.
Yeah. Do you have thoughts, Dr. Gursahani, about why more physicians haven't been having those conversations with their patients? And I'm going to ask what, full disclosure, might sound like a sexist question. I wonder if male doctors are less likely to have those conversations. They don't have uteruses. Like, what do you think is the explanation there? Or do you have any thoughts about that?
I think because the insertion can happen very quickly, I think assumptions are made that, oh, it's really quick. You should be able to suck it up and get through it. And, you know, we know now that that's not the correct answer, especially if it is causing enough fear to make someone not want to consider that option, which may be the best option for them. It's hard to say whether it is a male or female provider issue, because I've had some patients tell me that they thought their male provider was more compassionate than a female who, and I think it goes both ways. You know, if you're a female physician and you've had an IUD, maybe that gives you perspective to be more compassionate. Or maybe for you, you have a higher pain tolerance and it wasn't terrible. And so you think everyone should feel the same way. So I think it's very individualized.
Yeah. Alicia,
I want to add to that.
Please do.
Actually, I think from the comments that we heard on our piece, it kind of comes back to gaslighting of women's pain and concerns in the medical world. This is a problem that sort of has cut through history for so long. I worked on another story in May about the tenaculum, which is the scissor-like tool that gynecologists use to grasp onto the cervix during an insertion. And, you know, it's a very commonly used device. Every gynecologist has that, but it is one of the tools that greatly contributes to the pain of an IUD insertion, and its design dates back to something like the Civil War. So that just goes to show you that there hasn't been innovation in this space either to try and mitigate the pain, and it's sort of seen as like not important enough. And I think that the CDC also kind of hints at that. They highlight the fact that these guidelines are based on data from recent studies, which are only just coming out, you know, in the last decade or so. And so the medical world is kind of playing catch up here. And they also note that the evidence isn't of such great quality that they can say with certainty that this will or will not reduce pain. And again, that speaks to just how little research and investment has gone into women's health.
We're talking this recorded conversation about the pain some women experience with the placement of IUDs and new guidance from the CDC to address those concerns. Dr. Gursahani, how do you talk with your patients about IUDs? What's the conversation you have?
If a patient is interested in an IUD, I ask them, what would be concerning to them about the insertion and how we can try to make it less stressful. We talk about their options for pain control during insertion, whether it be pre-medicating with ibuprofen, whether using a cervical block of lidocaine, that per the CDC and per the data that we do have can be administered either via injection, or there is some data to say that topical sprays or gels can also be utilized. We talk about whether the patient, you know, based on their history, whether they have a history of trauma, feel like they can undergo an office procedure or would need additional anesthetic and be done in the operating room. I also offer patients, if they can have a driver, we can give them stronger pain medications or an anxiety medication so that they are then able to feel more comfortable with an office procedure, but they cannot obviously drive home afterwards. And then we review the side effects of the IUD, the biggest complaint for the hormonal IUD being irregular bleeding. We talk about the medical benefits of the IUDs in addition to contraception. We talk about ways in which we can try to treat symptoms if they're having them rather than just removing the IUD right away and giving it a little bit of time for their body to adjust. Any medication that someone starts, you know, it takes a little bit of time to see how it suits you because everyone responds differently. And then we talk about if they really don't like it, we remove it and we try something else.
Mm-hmm. Are there questions that you hear most commonly from patients that patients most typically have when they're considering this?
A lot of people bring up friends or family members who have had insertions and some of the concerns that they might have had. A lot of people want to know, how effective is it? Will it affect my fertility in the future is a very common question. And then if there were to be a complication such as an expulsion or a uterine perforation, what the next steps would be in that situation.
Alicia, how much more common have IUDs become as a method of birth control?
You know, it's funny that you see all these negative reviews on social media because CDC data shows that the IUD usage has gone up, actually. Since I think it's up until 2019, from 2015 to 2019, I think it's gone up by something like 20%. And so that's showing that, you know, despite the pain associated with it, that women are opting for something that is highly effective and also something that they can put in and forget about. You know, that's the beauty of long acting contraceptives. This the IUD, you can keep it in there for up to 8 years, and so it's sort of a one and done for many women.
We'll continue our conversation after a brief break. And later in the program, we'll upset my mother by asking the question, is slouching bad for you? This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. We're continuing our recorded conversation about IUDs, how some women experience intense pain during their placement and removal, and new guidance from the federal government aimed at addressing that problem. My guests are University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Obstetrics and Gynecology, Dr. Priya Gursahani, and New York Times reporter Alicia Haridasani Gupta. Dr. Gursahani, how safe and effective are IUDs? We've talked about how, you know, this procedure can be painful for some women, but what are some of the benefits of IUDs?
IUDs, regardless of the type, are over 99% effective at preventing pregnancy. And as I mentioned before, they are reversible contraceptive methods. So upon removal, patients can then try to get pregnant again if that is their goal. They are also used, for example, the copper IUD can be used for emergency contraception if it is inserted within 5 days after unprotected sex to prevent pregnancy. And the hormonal IUDs, particularly the 52 milligram IUDs, known as the Mirena or the Lyletta, can be used to treat medical conditions such as heavy menstrual bleeding that may result from fibroids or other conditions of the uterus.
And what potential side effects are there?
The biggest side effect of the copper IUD can be some heavier or crampier periods for the first 6 to 9 months. It does allow women to have irregular menses every month, which some people prioritize. And for those that do not want hormones, for example, maybe a patient with breast cancer who cannot take any hormone, it is very safe and effective. For the hormonal IUD, the side effects can be irregular bleeding, which is the most common complaint, though about by 4 to 6 months, many women stop having periods. And for many people, that's a goal, to have menstrual suppression. Occasionally, I've had patients complain of pelvic pain due to their IUD or mood changes, but generally those are far less than other types of contraception, which are more systemic.
Alicia, in your reporting, did you see data or if, with the people that you interviewed for all the reporting you've done on this, a difference between what women experience if they have already given birth and then have an IUD placed versus women who've never given birth and have an IUD placed? Is there a difference in pain or discomfort experienced among those populations?
So I'm going to read you one of the comments we received from a reader, and that will definitely answer your question. She says, I've had two completely unmedicated vaginal deliveries, and I'd put my pre-childbirth IUD insertion right up there on the pain scale with unmedicated vaginal birth. So I don't think there is much of a difference. I mean, scientifically, they say that there, you know, it is slightly less painful if you've had a child. But I've heard from many women that it sort of is as painful as giving birth, and the pain doesn't go away after giving birth.
Hmm. Have you heard from patients, Dr., about, you know, that difference? And I guess I'm thinking of women who have given birth and then have an IUD, because your cervix has been through something after you've had a vaginal birth, and I wonder if that makes a difference.
The data does say that parity makes somewhat of a difference when it comes to pain, and that patients who have never been pregnant or who are nulliparous have slightly more pain with insertion. However, you could have a woman who has had a child but maybe had a C-section and never dilated. So it's not a safe assumption to say that just because someone's had a baby that their pain is going to be less. I think anecdotally, when they're placed postpartum, within about 6 to 8 weeks after having a vaginal delivery, the cervix is a little bit softer and more compliant, and those patients tend to tolerate it, or have at least told me that their pain has been better compared to if they had one prior to pregnancy. But it doesn't mean we shouldn't be offering them all the pain control options.
Mm-hmm. Just to add to that, I think a lot of women opt for getting the IUD, you know, right after delivery, while they're still in the hospital, and if they had, you know, pain medication, it sort of just makes it a little bit easier to get the procedure done. But again, as mentioned earlier, after 6 to 8 weeks of giving birth, and your cervix is sort of back to what it was, it can still be painful to get an IUD.
Mm-hmm. If we place them after delivery, we ideally do it within 10 minutes of delivery. And so often if a woman has an epidural or you're doing it at the time of C-section, they're numb, but the expulsion rates are slightly higher. And also, unfortunately, insurance coverage can be a little bit different depending on whether you're privately insured or have Medicaid in terms of coverage for IUDs placed within the hospital. Mm. Mm.
Dr. Grassani, talk to us about the pros and cons of hormonal birth control and non-hormonal birth control and how you work with patients to find the best option. You mentioned that there are some patients for whom hormonal birth control isn't a good idea. Talk to us a little bit about that.
So I think a lot of it is individual preference. There are medical conditions I mentioned, very few, though, for progesterone, where perhaps a woman has had breast cancer that's progesterone receptor positive, who should not be exposing themselves to progesterone. Progesterone in general has less risk than estrogen, which is the other hormone commonly found in oral contraceptive pills or the patch or the vaginal ring. And that has several contraindications that we have to be aware of when we're assessing a patient for contraception. Part of it depends on patient preference of if they've had hormones in the past and felt side effects from them. Part of it has to do with whether or not they want to have a regular period. Culturally, it is in some cultures, it's important to patients to have that. So we talk about the risks and benefits of both. We talk about what their menses are like, because if they already have very painful, heavy periods, that might guide our selection. Or if they're having heavy enough bleeding causing anemia, then I might not want to put something in that's going to make that worse.
Yeah. Alicia, you've heard from a lot of people who've had bad experiences with IUDs. Obviously, you've done a lot of reporting on this. How important a role do you think IUDs play as a reproductive health option? What's your take on that?
Okay, so despite what I just read, you know, what I read you earlier, of all the comments coming in of how painful the experience was, we also heard from hundreds of women who have written in saying they love their IUD. They absolutely, you know, yes, it was painful, but they're so grateful that they could put it in. And, you know, not only did it prevent pregnancy, but as Dr. Gursahani said, it helps with a lot of other things. You know, we did another story a few months ago about the use of birth control pills, you know, for the same reason, because on social media, you'll find extremely negative content about the pill. And it, you know, it would lead anyone to assume that women are quitting the pill in droves. But our own analysis found that they weren't, and that in reality, usage of the pill has been actually trending upwards since 2018. And I mention that story because I think that that's what's happening with the IUD as well. CDC data only goes up to 2019, but I don't think that women are sort of abandoning this option, particularly against a backdrop of restrictive abortion rights around the country. My reporting has shown that women are really taking their contraceptive care very seriously, and many are stocking up on the pill, others are getting their tubes tied. And, you know, I think the IUD plays a big role in their ability to control their reproductive health, because it is so long acting and because it is so effective, and women are really being proactive and choosing a really highly effective form of birth control here.
Do you think those comments that people see online, whether it's complaining about the pill, quitting the pill, or, you know, really talking about their experiences with pain and IUDs, do you think that could be politicized?
Oh, absolutely. I think there is an element of urgency and an element of fear. And I think social media also amplifies negative. You know, it sort of has a negative bias. You'll see negative restaurant reviews, you'll see negative movie reviews, rather than someone just saying, hey, this is great, you know? There is a sort of bias online already. People turn to social media to complain. And so I think that there's definitely sort of this fear and urgency that can be created, and it can be politicized. But again, in my reporting, I found that women aren't so easily swayed, which is very encouraging. I think women do speak to their physicians, they do make decisions that are right for them.
Dr. Gursahani, earlier in the conversation, Alicia mentioned that there's this backdrop of women not being listened to when they talk about pain, their pain not being really paid attention to historically. Do you think providers are getting better about listening to women overall when it comes to their health concerns and really taking their pain seriously?
I think that is the move with the current generation. And of course, the release of CDC recommendations helps with that. In the last several years, we've also now have the subspecialty of complex family planning within the obstetrics and gynecology world. And I think a lot of the research is stemming from experts in the field who are also contributing both to science and to guidelines. I also think women are hopefully feeling like they can advocate more for themselves, and they're able to bring, they have access to more information online and can bring in their questions, versus maybe in the past they didn't have access to medical information.
Well, I've been talking with University of Cincinnati Associate Professor of Obstetrics and Gynecology, Dr. Priya Gursahani, and New York Times reporter Alicia Haridasani Gupta. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Up next, we'll rock my mom's world by talking about whether slouching is bad for you. This is Cincinnati Edition.